This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyu Suhib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Having seen them committing acts of violence against citizens throughout the campaign, makes it quite hard for the citizens, and then they may think that something had may happen if Museveni is not declared a winner.
That's a resident in Kampala on the possibility of voter intimidation in Thursday's Uganda elections. Details coming up also. Suspected jihadists have ambushed and killed 13 soldiers in northeastern Nigeria. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The UN support mission in Libya says it foresees deployment of a limited number of international monitors to ensure a ceasefire agreement takes hold. The statement urged the nation's warring rivals to accelerate the implementation of the ceasefire and the immediate repatriation of all foreign fighters and mercenaries. VOA senior analyst Mohamed Shenawi discussed these developments with Wolfgang Poshtai, former Austrian military attaché to Libya.
This is certainly a step into the right direction, although it is not yet clear how the mission will look like. The bandwidth goes from individual civilian observers accompanying the 5+5 patrols you've mentioned up to a full-fledged UN monitoring mission with sophisticated technical equipment, radar, airspace surveillance provided eventually by the European Union nations. What could be achieved by this mission depends on how the mission will look like. At best, it could provide an objective reporting of the situation on the ground. However, any violations of the ceasefire would need a concrete international political follow-up, and if this really happens, is still unlikely. For the monitors, freedom of movement on the ground is crucial. The mission would certainly elevate the threshold for a renewed outbreak of hostilities. It would make it more difficult to blame the other side for breaking the ceasefire if that's not true. But such a mission is no deterrence whatsoever, not even a deterrence of attacks of renegade groups, let alone an enforcement of the arms embargo. And it could be a risky mission because the unarmed observers operate in a terrorist environment and they could become an easy prey of the various terrorist groups. So there is a need for them for close coordination of their movements with the armed factions on the ground. But let me underline, from my point, the UN Secretary General is perfectly right with proposing this mission. A civilian observer mission is what is currently realistically achievable.
The statement called on Libya's rivals to accelerate the implementation of the ceasefire and the immediate departure of all foreign fighters and mercenaries. According to the October ceasefire agreement, the mercenaries are supposed to leave by January 20th. Could that date be a new test for the agreement?
I would not say so. It is already clear that there won't be a withdrawal of anyone by January 20th. It is still not even clarified who is a foreign fighter or a mercenary in the sense of this agreement. Is Turkey in Libya because they were requested to be there by the international recognized government, or do they need to withdraw because they are foreign fighters? I would say it can be ruled out that the Russian mercenaries will withdraw from Libya if the Turks remain. The next serious test for the agreement is, from my point of view, if both parties will accept the UN civilian monitoring missions. For the time being, only the Libyan National Army has given its consent. We have not yet heard anything from the GNA and also nothing from the two parliaments, from the House of Representatives and from the High Council of State. Not only UN Security Council resolution is necessary, but also the consent of all the warring factions, including the powerful Misrata militias, and the Turks.
Fathi Bashagha, Libya's interior minister, voiced hope that incoming U.S. President Joe Biden will support efforts to achieve stability in Libya. And he said, "We hope that the new administration has a major role in Libya's stability and reconciliation," stressing that security and stability of Libya are important for Europe and the U.S. Is that feasible?
No, this is not realistic. President Biden has many other problems of a much higher priority to deal with other than Libya. The fact remains that there are no vital and no important U.S. national interests related to Libya other than counterterrorism and regional stability, especially with regard to Egypt, which is Israel's neighbor. So what can be expected? I expect some more diplomatic engagement by the Americans, including eventually the appointment of a special envoy, but no major American initiatives on its own, let alone a direct military intervention beyond counterterrorism.
That was Wolfgang Poschtei, former Austrian military attaché to Libya, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shenawi. With Uganda preparing to vote Thursday for a new president, there are calls for rejecting violence, hate speech, and inflammatory statements. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Ugandans are enthusiastically looking forward to the election, which has drawn 10 candidates to challenge President Yoweri Museveni, who has been in office more than 30 years. Voting starts at 7 a.m. East African time and ends at 4 p.m. on Thursday. The result is likely to be announced after 2 days of vote tallying. Many Ugandans plan to stay at their polling stations to safeguard their votes. Rogers Bichwa is one such Ugandan.
The law talks about staying 20 meters away from the polling station. So you can't tell me to leave after voting that I go. Then I have to protect my vote. I have a right to start the polling station.
However, the Uganda Electoral Commission has asked Ugandans to go home after casting their ballots. Justice Simon Byabakama is the commission chairperson. He says because of COVID-19, only a specific number of people, including candidates, agents, security personnel, and polling officials, will be allowed to stay at polling stations.
It is your right to cast your vote. But you see, we are saying in the COVID era now, if you allow overcrowding in the COVID era, then you're exposing the people to what we are preventing them from contracting when we say social distancing at polling stations. Because during counting, can you observe social distancing during counting?
The commission will display results on screens at the district tally centers for candidates and their agents to compare with figures on the declaration of result forms from the polling stations. Candidates have been advised to ensure they have agents at every polling station and tally center. The electoral body has barred the use of any cameras at the polling stations to uphold ballot secrecy. Paul Bukenya is the Electoral Commission chairperson.
When you go to vote, do not take a picture of yourself voting. Because when you take it, you'll post it, you'll show how you voted. That's not allowed in law. You'll have violated the principle of secrecy of the ballot. You will have exposed whom you voted for, which can even create tensions between you and your friends and people.
Civic action groups and church leaders are calling for peace during and after the elections. Bishop Joshua Rele is a member of the Interreligious Council of Uganda.
We are after peace. We are not siding with any political persuasion party. We are after peace. As Ugandans, we all need peace. Peace before election, peace during election, peace after election. For us, whoever wins, wonderful, but we must have peace.
The calls follow increased reports of excessive force by security officers and the brutal beatings and arrests of scores of Ugandans during the 2 months of campaigning. More than 50 people died and scores were injured during the November protests following the arrest of presidential candidate Robert Kyagulanyi, known as Bobi Wine. He is seen as the leading challenger of Museveni. Security has been beefed up, with security personnel deployed to counter any violence. However, voters are concerned by the heavy deployment. Najib Nsubuga in Kampala is afraid the deployment will scare voters from going to cast their ballots.
I think that undermines the credibility of this election, the fact that these are people that are supposed to be fighting wars, and then number two, their mandate is not within the elections, within the electoral laws of our country. So the fact that they are being deployed at a critical moment, having seen them committing acts of violence against citizens throughout the campaign, makes it quite hard for the citizens. And then they may think that something hard may happen if Museveni is not declared a winner. I think that's where the tension comes from.
This year's election is an unusual event as the public has to vote under restrictions due to COVID-19 pandemic. Voters must wear face masks to be allowed into a polling station. Uganda is also observing a night curfew to stem spread of COVID-19. The opposition is afraid the curfew is likely to jeopardize the transmission of results in the night. Uganda has about 17.6 million voters spread across 146 districts and over 34,000 polling stations. To be elected president, a candidate must garner above 50% of the cast votes. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Just ahead of Uganda's presidential and parliamentary elections, the internet giant Facebook has shut a number of accounts belonging to government officials. The French news agency AFP reports they are accused of seeking to manipulate public debate ahead of Thursday's vote after a tense and bloody campaign. Incumbent President Yoweri Museveni faces a stiff challenge from Robert Chagulani, better known as pop star turned politician Bobby Wine. Facebook's head of communications for sub-Saharan Africa, Keys Anim Addo, in an email said a network of accounts and pages in Uganda that engaged in coordinated, inauthentic behavior were removed. He said the activity was linked to the government's Ministry of Information and Communications Technology. So far, Museveni's online account is still active. Cameroon authorities say more than 250 foreign workers, most of them Chinese, have fled post-election violence in the Central African Republic to the border town of Garoubolé. The foreign workers say they are being targeted by rebel groups disgruntled with the Central African Republic's December 27th presidential election that saw Faustin Archange Touadéra re-elected. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Garoubolé, Cameroon.
34-year-old Li Yu calls himself a spokesman for Chinese workers who fled post-election violence in the Central African Republic, CAR, to Cameroon. Speaking through a translator, he says 152 Chinese merchants, construction engineers, and those working on mining sites escaped to Cameroon in the past week. Li says armed rebel groups began threatening Chinese mining workers after the December 27 elections in the CAR. He says the situation worsened during the first week of January when groups of heavily armed men started searching their homes, looting, and asking all Chinese citizens to leave or be killed. Li says he is happy that Cameroon is hospitable to them. Li says more than 60 of the Chinese were working on mining sites in the CAR, and some of them trekked through the bush for days before arriving in Cameroon. He says some Chinese and other foreign workers were assisted to the border by the Central African Republic's military. Cameroon authorities say over 250 foreign workers in the CAR had crossed over to Cameroon within the past week. Cameroon Territorial Administration Minister Paul Atanganji visited the fleeing workers Sunday in Garoubolé. Nji says Cameroon's President Paul Biya dispatched him to the border to ensure their safety and to provide aid.
Le président de la République a demandé qu'on vous accorde l'encadrement nécessaire pendant ce moment.
He says Biya asked him to make sure that all foreign workers escaping the violent clashes in the CAR are safe in Cameroon, especially the Chinese. Nji says the mattresses, food, and first aid products they are handing out are from Biya to help the fleeing workers in Garoubolé. He says Cameroon's military will help transport Chinese citizens who want to go to their embassy in the capital, Yaoundé. Nji says 4,500 civilians have fled election-related violence in the CAR to Garoubolé since December. He says the violence has also blocked close to 2,000 trucks at Garoubolé, trying to get from Cameroon's coastal city of Douala to the CAR's capital, Bangui. The United Nations peacekeeping mission in the Central African Republic, MINUSCA, on Sunday said violence was rising to an alarming extent. MINUSCA said 4,000 civilians in the CAR towns of Boa and Grimari fled heavy fighting between rebels and troops to safety in Boa's Roman Catholic Church. Cameroon's Chief of Defense Staff, Lieutenant General René-Claude Meka, last week visited Garoua Boulaye. Speaking Sunday, he said Cameroon's intelligence indicated that CAR rebels were moving towards the border.
Nous sommes venus ici pour nous rassurer auprès de responsables.
Meka says he visited Cameroon's eastern border with the CAR to ensure that troops strictly apply measures to protect civilians from the disorder in the CAR. He says he is happy that the military is keeping Cameroon's side of the border safe by making sure that rebels and weapons do not infiltrate into Cameroon. Violence flared in the CAR over the December 27 presidential election, which saw Faustin Archange Touadéra re-elected with more than 53% of the votes. The CAR accuses former President François Bozizé, whose candidacy for the presidential election was rejected, of attempting a coup. He denies organizing December rebel attacks, which were repelled by UN troops. Bozizé's opposition coalition demanded the election be postponed due to the violence, but the government went ahead with the polls. Violence between armed groups since 2013 has displaced nearly 700,000 people inside the Central African Republic and forced over 600,000 to flee, most to neighboring Cameroon, Chad, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Garoua Boulaye, Cameroon.
Zimbabwe health authorities have declared the entire country a COVID-19 hotspot as infections surge. The country has recorded nearly 22,000 cases and just over 500 deaths, but some health professionals say the real caseload may be far higher. Atigando gives us more on the story.
Deputy Minister of Health and Child Care, John Manguiro, described the situation.
There's no area now hotspot. It's now the whole country. That's why we are at level 4 of transmission. If it's a cluster where there are just 20 people, 300,000
The ministry says about 3,000 COVID-19 tests are being done each day, but health professionals say at least 15,000 tests should be conducted daily. The majority of tests are done through private laboratories that charge $60 for each one, an amount that is out of reach for most Zimbabweans. Health professionals say that poses a challenge in establishing the correct figure of the national caseload. And while the caseload is rising, medical professionals say it is not necessary to declare the entire country a hotspot. Norman Matara, the Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights, notes the national figures match the case numbers in neighboring countries such as Botswana, and the biggest rises in border areas.
Of course, in the country, we've been witnessing a surge in the number of COVID-19 cases, but the cases have been mainly concentrated in Harare, Bulawayo, Manicaland, and Midlands, with the rest of the country very low 19 cases per day. The hotspots are mainly in about 4 provinces only.
There are concerns the national caseload is much higher than the official figures because many Zimbabweans crossed the border from South Africa illegally over the festive season, so they have not been tested. South Africa is in the middle of a surge in cases driven by a new strain of the coronavirus that spreads more easily. As cases increase, the country's health delivery system is overwhelmed. Some health workers have stopped with work, protesting the lack of protective wear. Last week, at the Salim Gabe Hospital in Harare, the workers walked off the job, protesting the death of a matron, Miriam Pundu, of COVID-19.
The supply of PPE has been erratic and intermittent from the government. A Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights actually took the government of Zimbabwe to court to make sure that the court mandates them to provide PPE for health workers, and the court granted us that order. But even after that court order, we have seen that the government has been in contempt of court. It remains a very big challenge, and it is demotivating a lot of health workers. They are being exposed to this deadly virus.
Matara could not confirm whether the new virus strain from South Africa has arrived in Zimbabwe, saying no tests have been done yet to identify it. The government over the weekend said it could take delivery of COVID-19 vaccines next month under the auspices of the World Health Organization's COVAX program. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
A spike in COVID-19 infections among Zimbabwe nurses and lack of protective equipment threatens the government's effort to contain the pandemic, as healthcare workers call for a strike to push for better working conditions. VOA's Chididu Ofor reached Prince Tarasawa, a senior midwife at the Sally Mugabe General Hospital, on the challenges of caring for a growing number of patients.
Water is the number one problem. There is an inadequate supply of water. Most of the times we don't have running water. The number one problem is the issue of resources. We don't have surgical sundries, like bandages, surgical blades, and also some other vital machines. Like, for example, in my ward that I work, we have got about, it's subdivided into 6 units, but we share one suction machine. So if another unit requires a suction machine, you've got to move from one place and you get it from another unit, and it actually affects a lot of things. There are some, not fluid-giving such as, but there are fluid-giving machines, the ones that administer, that you put the fluid-giving set for to administer IV fluid. We have very few, and some few other machinery that we do not have that further complicates the issue.
How many of your members have either been infected or died because of COVID-19?
We do not have enough PPE, so it has resulted in some of our members getting infected by the COVID virus. We do not have the correct number right now of how many staff members have fallen ill recently, but giving an example of one ward, a quarter of the staff, they have COVID as we speak right now, which is quite a huge number. And people are getting tested, they're getting positive, and this is a very sad scenario. We've been trying to compile members, but it's difficult because when some of your members are in isolation, information is very difficult to flow, to come in. So at the end of the day, you rely information with information from the infection and control sisters. But the number is getting high. As a union, we've been trying to compile the list so that we can come up with the number of nurses that have tested positive. But I can safely say for the past week, we've had about more than 15 nurses testing positive for the virus. And it has been a sad scenario. The number is growing up every day. You get about 7, 8, or even at most 10 people getting positive. These are mainly nurses, not doctors.
Some are worried that a strike at this moment will worsen the health crisis.
It was not a strike as such, but it was just a general meeting, and then it was called off. But people did not work for quite a good number of hours, and then no more retained, as they were assured that something was being done. So as we speak right now, people have given them some days to see if something is going to improve, then they'll map their way forward. As we have always said, as a union, we do not actually think the strike action at this middle of the pandemic is the best way to go. But at times, the nurses are left with no option but to follow that route. But we have said, let's wait, let's give dialogue a chance as we see if these concerns are being addressed, because we do not have to have a situation whereby strikes become the order of the day, and a situation whereby each and every time there is an issue of nurses striking because of poor PPE, poor remuneration, and things like that. We want a situation whereby these grievances are addressed as they are, without politicizing them, whereby these grievances are addressed in good faith, with each and every party committed to make sure that things are solved. Then we'll be in a position to move forward to tackle this pandemic without having to lose a lot of lives.
That was Prince Tarasawa, a senior midwife at Zimbabwe's Sally Mugabe General Hospital, speaking with VOA's Chinedu Ofor. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo, and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the internet.